old buggy. It was so cold that my mother would heat bricks in the oven before we left, then wrap dank coffee sacks around them to keep them from catching on fire for us to put our feet on. And then we had an old army canteen from World War I that we filled with hot water, and we put our hands on that. In front of the buggy, we had a storm apron that fastened, and in that storm apron there was a slit that we could pull the check line through to drive.
And a little window that's so big.
Yes, you could see out. Mm-hmm. We weren't afraid of anything. I can remember water being over the bridge at Rowland when there was an old wooden bridge with loose planks in it, and we drove right through that water, deep water, and it's a wonder the planks hadn't been washed away and we just fallen through there. We weren't afraid of anything. We meet cattle being driven to Rowland, to the stockyards, and we were supposed to stop and let the cattle go on. But we had a girl riding with us who was sort of a little devilish, and she'd hit the horse with a buggy whip and say, "Go on through those cattle." and we go lickety split right through the cattle, scattering them everywhere. As I said, we always had someone riding with us, and when we got the old four-seated car without any curtains, we had it full. My father never charged anyone for hauling. We just hauled all we could hold.
Could you describe Walnut Flat again, when you your first memories of it? We didn't have it on tape before. You were talking about what you remember about Walnut Flat.
About
the community.
Uh-huh. Oh, we came here from the mountains. It was a very pretty place in comparison to where we lived in the mountains. The people were all on the same level socially. There weren't some that considered themselves better than others. And when we moved into our home up there, which was hadn't been built too many years, the people from whom we bought the place couldn't find a place, so we moved in on. And we were so crowded that the people living in this house, being from the mountains, too, invited us down here to spend a few nights. And it was in the wintertime. We slept up in this part of the house, which had, I think, two beds in each room, under feather beds, slept on the feather bed, and one on us for cover, because the woman had a house full of company at that time. Her mother-in-law was living with her. Her children were here, and some of their friends were here.
What was the name of the lady that was living here?
Bowling. And I can remember how good she was to us, and what good meals she had, and how eager we were for those people to find them a house in Stanford so we could get settled down up there in our house. And the same people who live in the old brick house moved out from town about the same time. And the Walkers were an old Lincoln County family. He had worked in the bank, and she was the only child of a very aristocratic old family. And they had two girls and three boys. And through the years, those boys and my brothers were playmates and very close.
Is there a general store or anything at Walnut Flat?
Yes. There was a little store over the hill run by Mr. Wade. And my mother would let us go over there to buy, my brother and I. There's no traffic on the roads in those days. A car maybe once a day, and maybe not that often, a few buggies. And she let us walk over there, although it was out of her sight, to buy cookies. We'd buy a package of cookies for a nickel. That was a treat for us. Although she always made the cookies for us, but bought cookies were different. And the old Presbyterian church was torn down right after we moved down here from the mountains.
Where was it?
Right up here. In syrup buckets.
What's a syrup bucket?
Some of the families bought Cairo syrup and peanut syrup. Peanut syrup is a maple flavored like syrup in half gallon and gallon buckets. Well, some of the families were so large that the mothers couldn't put up enough preserves and jelly. And they'd buy syrup. Someone just liked syrup over hot biscuits. Anyway, I remember one boy that came to Walnut Flat. I picked up a syrup bucket one morning, thinking it was his lunch. And when he opened it up, it was a half full of Cairo syrup. And we had an old tongue-tied boy there who said, "Who had Ubuntu to eat that turtle?" If a child forgot his lunch in those days, each child would give him something from his lunch. Some child might give a piece of fruit, another a biscuit and chicken, and another one a piece of cake. They shared. And very seldom did the poorest come without something.
Did you have to discipline the children, or how did you make them mind?
Yes, I was always... I guess I was always considered a mean teacher, but I always believed in firm discipline. I have a paddle left from my last days of teaching in junior high here at Crackworks upstairs. I took privileges from them. But they weren't really mean. Some of them didn't deserve those paddles I gave, but I was strict on them. But my mother was always, my mother was afraid that some big old boy would knife me. Boys usually carried knives. Most teachers had rules against bringing a knife to school, afraid that they'd get angry with each other and knife each other. My mother was always afraid that I'd get knifed because I was such a firm disciplinarian.
Did your students ever play tricks on you?
No, not many times. We always, we always had Christmas programs, and we had Thanksgiving, Halloween programs, and that was something new. The old type teacher never had anything like that, and the children enjoyed that, and the families enjoyed coming to see them, participating in Christmas activities, anything we put on. And our children, I'm proud of my children. I have some that went to the penitentiary, but most of them made good citizens. I have preachers, dentists, doctors, businessmen, just men of every profession who have gone to these little schools. Quite a few successful farmers, and some of these farmers, you know, are worth $1 million now.
What was your father's name?
Marion. M-A-R-I-O-N, James Marion. And one of those little brothers who went to me was named James Marion.
Do you know where, you said he lived in?
He came.
Jackson County?
He lives in Jackson County. We lived right on the edge of Jackson and Clay County when we lived down here. And I never saw a movie until I was about 8 years old after we moved down here. Some of our friends who lived across the road from us there in Clay County came down to visit us. And in the meantime, this young man had made a pharmacist and was running a drugstore at Manchester. And his wife came down to see us. They rode the train from London, and my father met them in buggy at Crab Orchard. And while they were here, they had no movies at Manchester then. They wanted to go to a movie here at Stanford. So they took me with them. And oh, I thought that was a treat. But they were silent movies, and some of them sat up there in front of the, we call it the opera house, and played the piano.
Is this Walton's Opera House?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Some woman played the piano for background music. And then after the movie, they took me to the drugstore and we had ice cream. They hung a lantern on the buggy so as if a car should come along, it wouldn't run into us. And I don't suppose I saw a movie after that until I went to college. I think Ben Hur was the first one after that career. And you know how dull Ben Hur. Ben Hur, though, has been updated since it first came out, you know, in black and white. And I've seen it since then in color and enjoyed it more. And when we were at Berea, we had to go to chapel three times a week, and we had to attend the cultural events. And I didn't have much background, but I learned to appreciate the music and good programs that they put on.
How long did you teach at Lynch?
4 years.
How many teachers were teaching
at Lynch?
Uh-huh.
I have no idea. We had a lot of them. We had about two teachers for each grade. That would have been the eighth, been 16, wouldn't it? And I just have no idea how many we had.
How old was the school when you started teaching there? Was it?
It hadn't been there too many years, because some of our neighbors who lived with us in Clay County when we left there in 1918 were living in Lynch. They'd gone there when, I imagined it opened in about 1918. Then right below Lynch was Benham, which is on the International Harvest, International Harvest Company, Lynch. And then right below that was Cumberland, which has a community college operating at the University of Kentucky.
Were you primarily teaching the children of the miners, or the children?
And the officials, too. Oh, I tell you, those people were so different. They were more rural. They had seen more of the world. Those miners made big salaries in those days. For those days, they made big salaries. And the officials were from all over the country. Harry Moses was president of the company then. And when he came in, he ate in the dining room with us, and he was just as friendly and nice to us. And those officials and those people in administrative positions were very cultured, traveled a lot, knew, and they wanted. We had the world of foreign people up there. We had them in Czechoslovakia. One of my co-workers in sixth grade was in Czechoslovakia, which was in existence then. I don't think there is any Czechoslovakia today. And we had a lot of from Poland, Italy, Hungary. We had some from Mexico. And there were a lot of blacks in Alabama. They had come from Birmingham, that steel center down there.
Did the blacks go to a separate school?
They went to a separate school. We had about 600 there. We had, if I'm not mistaken, about 1,100.
Did the blacks have black teachers?
Yes. Everything was segregated then. Because mm-hmm. I left there in 1940.
When they worked in the, did you visit the mines?
Yes, I did. I didn't want to leave there without, and several of the teachers didn't either, without going through the mines. So one Sunday, when the workers were all out, the assistant superintendent of mines, whose children I had, got in one of those little electric cars and hooked on some behind his car and put as many teachers in there as he wanted to, and we spent a whole morning going through those tunnels. They said there were 40 miles of tunnels then. There was no stripping of coal then, it was all underground. And he took us through those mines, through that mine, and part of the worked out mine was used as a reservoir to supply the city with water. And they tapped, it went under, those tunnels went under the mountain, which is Black Mountain. It went under the town, went under the creek. There was a fast flowing, clear stream of water that flowed through that town. You could hear it at night, it just made so much noise.
The Cumberland River.
No, it wasn't Cumberland River, it's Poor Fork.
Well, it's Poor Fork of the Cumberland.
It's a branch of the Cumberland River. And they tapped that creek, it wasn't polluted like they are now, and let the water run down into some of those worked out parts of the mine and build a dam across, and that's where the city got its water. And they said the mine went across, said that those tunnels went under the entire mountain and came out in another county near Whitesburg, but it was closed. We couldn't get out on that side. We had to come back over the same route that we traveled going through it.
Did you ever hear about any accidents?
There were none there, but they said there had been some before, and they said it was a terrifying thing to hear of a mine accident, to see all the mothers and the sisters gathered at the entrance of the mine waiting to see whether their husband or brother would be among those killed. They said the first one that always to reach the mine would be the Catholic priest. The biggest church there was a Catholic church, and we went to a community church, which was pastored by a Methodist preacher. Then there was a Baptist church in the lower end of town. But the Catholic and the community church, which had a Methodist pastor, and the Baptist were the main churches.
Did you ever have any language problems with your students?
No.
Being from these different backgrounds?
They talked in the home, I understand, they used their own language, but not at school. And most of them were very musical. And when the colored people had a funeral, they had a band march in, and their lodge, most of the colored people considered it an honor to belong to it. Their lodge, I don't know what lodge it was, but they all of any consequence belonged to the lodge, and they put on their lodge uniforms and feathers and loud outfits, and they had a band, and the lodge members marched in front of the hearse carrying the body. All they really celebrated.
The band playing some kind of a march or?
Yes.
Funeral march or?
Well, sometimes it sounds to me like it's more jazz.
Was there ever any problems between the races then?
No. And the ethnic groups had their own get-togethers. There was I wanted to go to the different boarding, there were boarding houses there run for the Hungarians. They preferred to live together if they were single. Most of the people were family. Well, they had families, lived with families, but there were several that didn't have families, and they lived in hotels and boarding houses. And as I said, we lived in the big hotel the United States Steel Corporation owned, but it is gone now. I suppose half the houses have been torn down, and the movie house is gone. I don't know where the big commissary, they had one big store and two branch stores where people bought their anything they needed. And they had the most expensive dresses and, I've been given $2.98 and $3.98, and they had $40 dresses. Oh, they looked expensive to me.
And I tell you who bought most of them, black men. Because those black men were so stout, and so much of the work in the mine was done by hand, and they were paid according to the amount they shoveled, or amount they did by hand. And they made so much more of those big, strong black men from Alabama. We didn't have many regular mountaineers there. Most of them were foreign and black, foreign extraction.
What did you do for social activities?
We went to church on Sunday. And we'd have little dinner parties there at the hotel. And they didn't like for you to go home very often. And they didn't like for you to have company for the outside. Because the United States Steel Corporation had a pretty good sized police force there. And you came in there from outside, they tailed you until you left. Because the town was it was unorganized, and the union was trying to organize. I don't know whether they're organized today or not. And they didn't want the union to get in there and organize them. And anyone who came there, they suspected being a union organizer. And those miners were getting more than any town that was organized. Any coal mining camp that was organized.
Was there ever any union trouble?
Not while I was there. Mm-hmm. But now there was later. And there had been attempts at organizing the camp before I went. But I remember I roomed next door to one big old policeman. I felt pretty safe.
How long did school run then?
9 months. 9 months. Mm-hmm. And here, it is, when I first started, we went 7 months, and then it was raised to 8, and then finally to 9.
Were you paid in cash?
No, a check. And during the Depression, the school board ran out of funds, and there were several months that they couldn't pay us, not at all. And I didn't get... They did pay us 6 or 7 years later. It just seemed like a gift when that $80 check came. Because I went, as I said, I got down to making $58, and at Crab Orchard, which was a little town school, the teachers were making $40, and they couldn't pay their teachers, and they went into the county system. She's probably seen those old catalogs, haven't she?
Not really. I haven't really looked through them very much.
Stayed on as, I suppose you'd call her house mother there at Sullivan Hall after she was let out, after she got too old to be dean of women. Mm-hmm. And she inspected our rooms, and if she found trash in the waste paper basket, she'd call you up on the carpet over keeping your room clean. They were tight on us about it. We checked out. You had to be an upperclassman to go out at night most of the time. And even then, it was a good idea for us to check out, because if anyone back home died and called, they'd know where you were. But it was good for us. And then Miss Case came along. Mrs. Case was a widow who had 2 girls. And she tried to teach us some social graces when she had those little teas. And she'd encourage us to go to the good programs. I enjoyed those. I usually attended most of them because they were a learning process for me, because I never had anything like that here in the country.
When you came back from Lynch then in 1940, did you start teaching here again?
No. I went to the University of Chicago with Miss Mobley, who has retired from Eastern in the business school. And I didn't like it up there, and so I came back and married. And then I went back to teaching in Crab Orchard. I've taught in high school. I've taught in the grades. I've taught in the rural schools where you had all grades. Some, in the rural schools, we let the older children who finished their work early help with the little ones. They'd take them maybe outside and flash those cards and let them read and help them. And the older children enjoyed helping more than you think they did, the little ones. We called each class up to that recitation bench, which was an old homemade church seat. And the others worked while we were having first grade, second grade, third grade. Some years we wouldn't have any in a grade. And that gave you more time to spend on the others. At the end of the year, the eighth graders would take a county examination to determine whether they were ready for high school. And I never did have anyone fail the county examination. They were always ready.
Did you administer the examination? Was it a written exam?
I believe that maybe one year they had to go and take it from the superintendent. But they always... We spent more time on reading. We had writing books. And we had a period of day to write. We used a Palmer method. Started out with up and down, and then new swirls, and then they learned to write quite well, and now you can't read some of the children's writing. And they learned to read quite well, too. This teacher that I had Berea in practice teaching before I started teaching knew that I was going into a rural school that had no equipment, so she gave me she'd been teaching in a private school in Cleveland, and she brought down just boxes of books, and she gave these girls that were going into the rural schools a lot of storybooks for the children. All they were like them. Because they never had them before. All they had was textbook. There was a library up in the courthouse at Stanford, but it had too advanced material for children. It didn't have any children's library.